You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, Pat Lane, as always. A little under the weather this week, people. A little under the weather. Honestly, you know, you have the Jordan flu game. You got Drew Bledsoe playing with some screws in his finger. And then you got me this week, episode 54. I'm not going to say I'm a hero, but it's a pretty heroic performance for me, if we're being honest. So, you know, again, not saying I'm a hero, but it's pretty heroic. Today is episode 54, as I said. That makes it the Teddy Bruschi episode, the Donta Hightower episode, and of course the Ed Pinckney episode. Today we have Gabrielle, who is the EIC of the Editor-in-Chief. EIC is code for Editor-in-Chief of WTP Sports, and she's also the creator of Girl at the Game. She's on to talk about Red Sox, because that's her specialty. I also have the 3-Minute Drill coming up. I will get into a little bit of Celtics on the 3-Minute Drill, and this week in sports history, as always. So we're going to get you into to the interview with Gabrielle. But before we do, I want to remind you, this podcast is sponsored by Beard Brand. Don't forget that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. Without further ado, let's get you into the interview with Gabrielle. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show Gabrielle Starr. She is the editor-in-chief of WTP Sports. And also the creator of Girl at the Game. And welcome to the show, Gabrielle.
Thanks, Pat.
Recurring guest at this point. You've been on once before, so here you are again.
First time in 2018, though, I think, right?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure last time it was like in November or December or something like that.
Yeah, it was a while ago. We definitely before the start of the baseball season. So
that's true. That is true. So, and here we are, 44 games in, 44 and a half games in at this point.
Well, eighth inning. So
yeah, so maybe even more, 44 and 8/9.
Oh, God.
But no, the Red Sox, I mean, obviously at 30-14, like they look pretty damn good so far. But when you start to look into the actual numbers, they're 13-12 in the last 25 games. So, yes, they started off super hot and they've been pretty much at 500 since then. And so the questions kind of are going to be, can they keep it going? And of course, Boston's so negative. We're all just super negative. And so we're like, well, who cares about what's happening in the regular season? What's going to happen when we get to the playoffs? And, you know, look at this guy.
Gotta have a good regular season to get to the playoffs, though. Everyone seems to forget that. If we keep losing games to teams like Oakland, we're not going to make it to the postseason.
That's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah.
I mean.
Forget about losing games to Oakland. How about getting shut out, getting no hit by Oakland.
You had to start with that right off the bat.
Well, I mean, you brought up Oakland. I'm just saying.
That wound is so fresh still.
You could have said anybody and you said Oakland. So what do you want me to do? You know?
Well, you know, we're currently losing to the Orioles, but I'm holding out hope that 6-3 isn't the worst deficit. I mean, we came back from an 8-1. Oh no, a 7-1 back in April.
Yeah. No, 6-3 can happen.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, so, we'll see. But yeah, it's a little terrible play out there in left field gives Bogarts, I guess, a double, although I doubt that's a double, but probably
he's a
two-run error.
His 13th double of the season we got going on right there.
I don't know if I'd call that a double. If I'm the scorer,
call it a double, but MLB TV called it a double.
It's a two-base error if I'm calling it. But either way.
You know, as long as the errors aren't being made by Rafael Devers, I'm like pretty content at this point because,
he's made quite a few. It's so funny because everyone talks about how terrible what's-his-face has been in the field.
Nunez?
Yeah. And I'm like, Nunez might be bad in the field, but Devers is 10 freaking – Devers has literally has half of their errors for the season. That's the first guy he went. Now, he's been doing it at the plate. So I guess, you know, and not as much as obviously we'd be hoping he is, but he's still been doing it at the plate a hell of a lot more than Nunez has. So
I to be guess fair, you, Rafael Devers is 7.5 years old. So, you know, you can both, you can look at it two ways. Either when he's amazing, you're like, oh my God, he's a child prodigy. And then when he's bad, it's like, well, you know, he doesn't have the experience or the cultivated skill. Like, there's raw talent, but then there's cultivated skill. Like, David Ortiz was not a good, you know, batter when he was in Minnesota.
I thought you were gonna say fielder. I was like, he was never a good fielder ever. But okay, all right, I'll give you batter.
I, you know, just like, you know, some players are like fine wines, and they get better with age, and then some players, it's like, you know, they're Bryce Harper. But you can't you can't expect a guy who's, you know, what, like 21 years old as of November to be like making, like, yeah, it's annoying that he's got half the team's errors, but like, it's not surprising so much considering he didn't have good coaching last year and he's 21 years old, you know. It's not like he's had the minor league experience that a lot of players have had where they work on a lot of the fundamentals, and he doesn't have, you know, he didn't exactly have the best intro to the Red Sox last year when he was dealing with Farrell and company, who were one of their biggest problems was communication with the players.
Right. No, it's a good point. I mean, you know, it's definitely a good point. I'm still holding out hope for him. I mean, he's only hitting like 245, but, you know, I still think he's going to be fine. And again,
which,
like,
was
you said,
most of
it's
the team last year, and we made it to the ALDS.
That's very true. That is very true. But you never know, I suppose. But let's move on to let's actually talk about a player who's been crushing it, and that's Mookie Betts. He has been just out otherworldly. Hit his 14th home run tonight against the Orioles. And, you know, the kid is just on fire. And right now, he's got the best numbers in the league. I mean, you know, most people saw Carrabba's tweet out something, you know, MLB.com, or someone wrote an article about, you know, Mike Trout being on pace to have one of the best statistical years in baseball history.
And I retweeted that. I was like, you spelled Mookie Betts wrong.
Right, exactly. Well, and Carrabba's pointed out, like, you know, he's better at him than in pretty much every single offensive category. Like,
yeah,
how
well,
the hell can you point
out
Mike Trout
instead
of Mookie
Betts? You've got Mookie batting .364, Trout's batting .290, okay? And then Trout's got 12 homers, Mookie has 14. Like, Mookie has had the lead league in homers for weeks now. He lost it to Machado last night for about 10 hours, got it right back tonight. He's leading the league in RBIs, tied with JD Martinez. Stolen bases, he had 3 stolen bases last night, which is a new career high game stolen bases for him. He had 3. You know, like, you can't even, he's, I've, you, you're, lo- I'm looking at Trout and Betts right now, and Mookie's ahead of him in almost everything except wins above replacement. Like, that's it.
Right. Well, and that's the big thing. I mean, to me, you know, right now, at least this season, I think he's having a better year now. Maybe will that even out by the end of the year? Possibly, you know, but we'll see, you know.
It's definitely compared to 2017. And I'm always the person that's like annoyed when people compare things to season by season, because it's like the season's over. Like, you close the book on that. But at the same time, you need to recognize the fact that last year, Mookie led the Red Sox in home runs with 24 homers.
Right.
It's the middle of May, and he already has more than half of the homers he had cumulatively in last year's entire season and postseason. So it's like, you know,
it's true.
Just have to recognize what a resurgence he's had. You know, he had kind of a Porcello-esque situation where he went from a 2016 where he was like, oh, look at that. Speak of Eduardo Nunez.
I know.
Eduardo Nunez.
I just saw that. I'm like, of course, we're over here talking shit about Nunez, and he drives it on, drives one in.
Talk shit about Heath Hembry next, because.
Oh, yeah, oof, right?
God. But, you know, you just have to recognize, like, these players, it's. Baseball is so finicky, both teams overall, players overall. You know, Mookie was AL MVP runner up in 2016. And then last year, he was the best player on, like, the worst home run hitting team in the league. And now he's leading the entirety of Major League Baseball in almost everything.
Right.
But it's also,
well, and,
but it's,
you know,
also,
I think,
you know, May 18th. So.
Right. I think the one thing that. Right. I think the one thing people point out about Trout, and I guess, so we, we wanted to talk about this, and so I guess we'll just start it now. We had a discussion going on with some of the WTP guys about, you know, whether you'd pick Trout or Betts.
Yeah.
So if you had to start a team and you could only have one center fielder, would it be Mike Trout or would it be Mookie Betts? And again, Betts isn't necessarily a center fielder. He's a right fielder. But say you could have one outfielder, and it would be Trout or Betts. And the question is, who would you take? And so I think it's a great question because it's really – I mean, Trout it's has really, a lot more tread on the tires.
Yeah.
But he's 26 and Betts is 25. So it's not like – you know, he's played a lot more years – not a lot more years, but he's played more years than Betts has – but he's only a year older than
him. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm obviously way more familiar with Mookie's stats because, you know, my everyone at WTP knows my tunnel vision is like so honed in on the Red Sox. It's crazy. But I mean, like, and as of right now, I'm still going Mookie because I just think that, like, he is so – he's been so clutch, you know, and I went to Anaheim for the Sox Angels series and, you know, Mookie had his first three homer game of the season in game one of the Anaheim series. Like he actually hit a home run the minute we got to the ballpark. And it was that time during the game where he homered. And then I think JBJ homered. And then I think Brock Holt homered maybe within about 5 minutes. And Mookie just kept homering. And I'm like, this guy, he just has something. Maybe it's the fact that his initials are MLB. Maybe it's the fact that, like, you know, even last year when they were so bad, he still led the team. Like, he was never as bad as everybody else. Like, even when things got so bad, he was still really good. I don't know. I'm still choosing Betts over Trout just because I feel like he – has so much potential. Like he hasn't even unlocked. Like that's the thing is you're saying, you know, that Trout has more tread in his tires, right?
Right.
Or like more mileage, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
But that's the point is Mookie is doing better than Trout with less experience and less mileage. So right. You have to hope and assume that he could only get better. Knock on wood. I have no wood in my apartment. Everything in my apartment is IKEA. But you know.
You have to
assume, you know, they're currently trending upwards at the same time, but.
Well, here's some stats from Trout. So Trout's first full year in the major leagues was 2012. Okay. Yeah. It was his first full year in the major leagues. So 2012, he was rookie of the year. He was an all-star. He won the Silver Slugger and he was runner up in the MVP. In 2013, he was runner up for the MVP, Silver Slugger, all-star game. In 2014, he was in the All-Star game, he won Silver Slugger, and he won the MVP. In 2015, he was runner-up for the MVP, was in the All-Star game, won the Silver Slugger. In 2016, he was in the All-Star game, won the MVP, and got the Silver Slugger. And then last year, he was hurt, only played 114 games last year, was an All-Star, and was fourth in MVP voting. And one thing that I think people lose about Trout is that the rest of his team blows. The Angels are terrible.
They're so bad.
And
well,
so, like, last year...
Well, you have Shohei Ohtani now, but...
Well, now they do, right? But
even
like,
that's kind of like a sideshow, you know?
In 2015, okay, Trout played 159 games in 2015. His batting average was .299. He had 41 home runs and 90 RBIs. He had 32 doubles, 6 triples, 41 home runs and 90 RBIs. Even possible. You have 41 home runs and 90 freaking RBIs. That means nobody's on base ever when you get up to bat. And so, like, you know, his numbers, I think, are lacking at times. I mean, last year, same thing last year. He had 33 homers, 25 doubles, 3 triples, 33 home runs, 72 RBIs. And, oh, by the way, he hit 306.
And he only played in what? Would you say 114
games.
114 games.
So that's the thing for me is that his team sucks and the lineup around him sucks. And you look at it and say, imagine if this guy had a David Ortiz behind him, or even a freaking Hanley Ramirez behind him. Like, give him somebody. He just has nobody. And so I think if you were to put him on a team that has that. He might even be better than what he is now. But you know, it's pretty difficult around here not to pick Mookie. And I actually thought Trout was a lot older because he started.
Yeah, playing, I did too. Because he's been playing for such for a long time. Long.
But
yeah, because he's been playing in the league since he was like 18 years old.
Right. Right. And that's the thing is that he's been here forever.
Oh, no.
And
20 years old. What am I 19. Saying? I can't do math.
He was 19 in 2011. So, yeah. But, you know, I mean, so, but this is his eighth year. I might have to go Trout, to be honest with you, just because he's so good. He's so fast. He's a good defensive outfielder. He plays center field. He plays probably a better center field than Mookie does. Now, that doesn't – I don't think that matters because I don't think center field, like, yeah, center field, right field, whatever. Like, yeah. I don't think it really makes a difference. But I just think when you look at it over time, you look at what Trout has done, and it's just – I mean, it's really kind of remarkable. And like I said, especially with the shit lineup he has around him. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
But then you could also – I mean, I have to say, like, obviously, look, Trout's amazing. Never going to discount that. It's just funny to me when, like, you know, like I said, like, seasons past or seasons past. Right now, this season, Mookie is having a better season. Overall, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would be an idiot if I said that overall Mookie is a better player, because historically speaking, Mike Trout has been one of the best players in baseball in the last decade. There's no denying that. I will say that one of the things is you could also argue that one of the reasons he's so good is because he has a shit team, where you have a Giancarlo Stanton situation where he then goes to a strong team. And like we're going to talk about in a few minutes, Giancarlo is having a much worse season than JD Martinez, and he is not having the season that they were hoping for so far. You know, now that he's on a big market team surrounded by other supposed superstars, you know, he stood out because he was on the Marlins.
Right.
And
right.
Now, no, and you have to, and like anyone who says that Major League Baseball is equal across all teams.
No, it's not.
It's a moron. I mean, you have teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees, and then you have teams like, you know, the Marlins and the Rays. Right.
No, that's totally true. I think we're going to talk about Stanton in a minute, but because I think that's an interesting case where do it yet. But I think for me personally, I look at it and just say Trout's done it consistently, and he's done it every year. That's not the case with Stanton.
True. But, Stanton also until last year was injured every single year of his major league career.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's a valid point too. I mean, I just think too,
not like, in terms of his stats, just saying he has a propensity to get injured,
right?
And therefore, like he's also, you know, his, you know, contractually speaking, he's a ridiculous acquisition because the guy has only had his rookie season and last season are the only two seasons that he was fully healthy for the entire season. Meanwhile, just have to say that the Red Sox currently have two outs and the base is loaded. And it's moments like this where I miss David Ortiz so much, because you know that if it's 2007 and the bases are loaded with two outs, that's a grand slam.
Well, that's true. But now we've been sitting here talking about who's better. And, you know, who steps up to the plate is Mookie Betts, you know, with the bases loaded and two outs in the bottom of the eighth. So,
and my, you know, anxiety, I mean, is like in my throat right now because, you know, we're talking about this, but then against Brad, whatever this guy's name is, who's pitching, apparently Mookie's batting like 167.
Yeah. No, not good. But, you know, I mean, who knows?
I'm just Pat, we're about to eat our words.
I know. Well, let's hope not. Hey, I picked Trout. Don't look at me. I'm the one that picked Trout.
I gotta ask, who else from W? That was a horrible swinging strike. How many people chose Trout over Betts?
Everybody picked Trout over Betts. I actually was saying maybe Trout over, maybe Betts over Trout. Joe, you wouldn't be happy with Joe because he was like definitely Trout. So
Joe tweeted that this morning, but I'm never happy with Joe, and he just ordered me dinner. So
after that, I bet you may not be happy with Mookie. Yet, so. I know that's all right. After that, I bet you may not be happy with Mookie Betts either. But nevertheless, let's move into the Martinez and Stanton thing, because I think that's interesting. Just to kind of take a look at, if you look at Stanton's stats and look. Stanton in the past, I mean, there's no denying he was a very good hitter, but I mean, 59 home runs was unbelievable, but his highest before that was 37. And he did that twice. But he was only above 30 home runs three times in his career before last year. And I know he was limited, but he was playing over 100 games in all those seasons. So, except for one of them, he played 74. But the other
we just blew that bases loaded situation right there. We could have taken the lead and then some, and we just did not.
You heard me say it, right?
My TV's behind, so.
Oh, yeah. No.
MLB TV.
Yeah, movie popped up a second. But, I mean, I think when you start looking at what he did, yes, he had a phenomenal year last year, but he hit 281, which is pretty close to his career high. His career high was 290 before that. But, 59 home runs was 22 more than he had ever hit in his career. I mean, it's almost double what he had hit in any other year. So it's like you start looking at it and you start looking, saying like, okay, that's a little bit of an outlier there where you're trying to say like, really? Like, is he really that good?
No. He's definitely not worth $325 million.
I mean, I don't think anyone's worth that.
Well, no, no one's worth that, obviously.
No.
I mean, here's the thing. So I said in the offseason at the beginning, and I think this was after our podcast, so it's not, and even so, you do the podcast every week, so no one would remember. I never wanted Giancarlo Stanton. Like, all these people wanted Giancarlo Stanton, and I was like, look, the Red Sox over the years historically have made such bad decisions when it comes to signing sluggers. Even when they still had Poppy on the team, they signed Crawford and Gonzalez to 7-year contracts worth upwards of $140 million in the same year. Both of those guys lasted one season with the Sox. You have Pablo Sandoval, the bane of my existence, who got $95 million for 5 years and was like maybe the biggest disaster since the Hindenburg.
In fairness, if the Red Sox had ever made the World Series, Sandoval would probably have been fantastic.
Why? Because of the three homer game?
Oh, I mean, 2012. He's a super clutch player who only shows up in the playoffs. I mean,
which is my least favorite kind of player. just to obviously to put that out there. But
it's the stupidest thing of all time to say like, well, this guy sucks in the regular season, but he's really good in the playoffs, so we're gonna pay him.
He's a bandwagon player. That's literally what he is. So anyway, Pablo Sandoval aside, because I could literally do a whole episode just shitting on Pablo Sandoval. The Red Sox needed a big bat. Like, that wasn't a secret. It wasn't, that wasn't going to be – I just didn't want it to be Stanton because I said Stanton – my article last year – like, I had an article last year saying, Stanton's season was not only unheard of for, most baseball players, but it was unprecedented for him. Like, even he doesn't have seasons like that. It's not like every year Giancarlo Stanton hits upwards of 50 home runs and 132 I think RBIs. It was even Giancarlo Stanton has never had a season like Giancarlo Stanton had last year, and therefore if in terms of longevity, in terms of injuries, in terms of everything under the sun, Giancarlo Stanton is not worth the money that the Marlins and now the Yankees are paying him. Meanwhile, J.D. Martinez split his 2017 season between the Diamondbacks and the Tigers. He only appeared in 119 games, and he batted .303 with 45 homers and 104 RBIs.
Right, and not just that, too.
You spend half the season with one team, half the season with another. You don't even play a full 162 games. And a lot of players really struggle when they're traded, There's like an acclimation period. There's like a learning curve. You're in a different ballpark, all these kinds of things. And somehow in just 119 games, he still batted over .300 with 45 homers and 104 RBIs.
All right. So the thing for me about Martinez, I think, is that for JD, it's really kind of, ever since his first real full year in the majors is 2014. I know he played 113 games in 2012, but his first real year was 2014. Since 2014, his batting average is .315, .282, .307, .303 last year, and now he's hitting .344 this year, which is ridiculous. It's only through 44 games or whatever.
Yeah, but he's homered three times this week.
No, right. But what I'm saying is that it's a little bit of consistency there as far as batting average wise. Even if you're not getting 30 to 40 home runs from him, which he's on pace to do. Even if you're not getting that, if he's hitting 300 and getting, you know, 30 or so doubles, like, you're at least happy with that. Whereas Stanton, it's like, you don't know if you're going to get that from him. And not only that, but it's much less of a commitment, I think, for Martinez. Number one, they didn't have to give up any prospects. And the Yankees really didn't have to give up crap to get him. But, like, you know, the thing for me is that you didn't have to give up any prospects at all. And you're
which is good because we didn't really have any.
Right, exactly. And so, and you're also paying them a lot less. So I think, you know, overall, it's better for them. And Martinez has been significantly better than Stanton this year. So,
yeah, well,
you know, time will tell, obviously, but it seems like it was the right move for the Red Sox for sure.
I mean, I've got their stats for right now lined up. And JD is ahead of him in at bats, runs, hits, singles, doubles. They each have one triple. He's got more homers, more RBIs, like a lot more RBIs. He's got 38 RBIs. Stanton has 26.
Right.
The only thing Stanton's leading him in are stolen bases and walks. And you don't want to lead in walks.
Well, I mean, I don't think that matters. I mean, I think walks is fine.
Well, if you're driving in more runs and you have more homers, then you don't want to be leading in walks.
Right. Well, that's true. That is very true. Yeah. Well, I think Stanton, too. I mean, what's he hitting? He
can't Stanton's be hitting. So here's the best part. Stanton's batting .245 and right. JD's batting .344.
Right. So almost 100 points over.
Literally 99 points. Oh, my God. The Orioles extended their lead. Really?
Yep.
It's great. Cool. Yeah. I mean, on base percentage, .394 for JD, .333 for Stanton.
Right.
Slugging percentage, Stanton has .510. JD has .656.
Right. No, it's not even close. And right now, it's not even close. And again, we're only a quarter of the way through the year. I mean, you never know what can turn around, but right now, it's not close. But listen, we've talked way too much positive stuff about the Red Sox.
Oh, great. Heath Hembry, and it's perfect timing because Heath Hembry's on the mound. So it's perfect time to get negative.
Let's go, Heath. So I do want to talk about two guys in particular. Heath Hembry can suck it. I don't even care
what he's doing. I don't even know why he's still here.
Well, who else are they going to put out there? Stephen Wright looked great tonight. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Wright's making a case to take over for Drew Pomeranz in the starting rotation tonight.
No, he's not. Why? Because Drew Pomeranz looks so terrible?
Pomeranz is consistently terrible.
Yeah, well, Stephen Wright didn't exactly pitch a gem out of the bullpen tonight. But either way.
I just remember, like, in April, I was complaining about Drew Pomeranz. And, yeah, it's still only May. But the thing is, everyone's like, oh, give Pomeranz a chance because he's just coming back from an injury. That's not a thing for me.
Yeah.
Because he's had, like, five starts and none of them have been good.
And I also don't understand, to me at least, doesn't make any sense, why they didn't undo that deal. Why not take the kid back, you know, and send Pomeranz back when you knew he had an issue? He wasn't great. It's like, just take the young kid back. I mean, I get they wanted the arm because they thought they had a chance to compete, I guess, is the reason why they did it. But it's like, what are you doing? It was very short-sighted, I thought, on their part, especially on what you'd gotten from Pomeranz before. It didn't make any sense.
My thing also is just, like, you know, you've got Hector Velasquez has been pitching really well. And right. he even started, I think, one or two games at the beginning of the season when Pomeranz was on the DL. And it's like, my feeling is, if you've got Velasquez and you've got, you know, I mean, Brian Johnson so far, like, has seriously deteriorated. But at the beginning of the season, he also pitched the starting game.
Right.
You've got players who can do both. You don't need to rush Pomeranz back.
Right.
And when he had that first start where he was so bad, and I was like, okay, so you tried it. He's clearly got stuff that he needs to work out. So you don't need to keep forcing this. And his first start was the first game against Oakland. And the next day we were no hit. And I'm not saying that that's, like, you know, the reason that we has suck, but I did say in between those two games, I did publish an article being like, look, the Red Sox were doing so great We don't need to mess. I think the title was something like, don't mess with perfection. Like, if Pomerantz isn't ready, there are plenty of other players who are.
Right.
You don't need to mess with it. And they did. And that was like a downward spiral that was, you know, unprecedented. No one expected us to stay, you know, going 17-2, 18-2, 19-2. No one also, I highly doubt anyone expected us to go, what are we, like 12 and 11
in our last 23? 13 and 12 in our last 25.
Yeah. That is a hard fall.
Right. No, it's 100%. It's not. And look, I mean, I think that they can survive some of that. I mean, obviously they're tied for first place still because they started off 17-2. So obviously you have a little bit of leeway because of the start, but you still don't want to see it happen. And, you know, so we'll see how they pull themselves out of it. I think JBJ has been a disaster this year.
Oh God.
I don't understand what they're doing.
What's he batting, like 165?
It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, like, what is he bringing you? And I know he's had a few hot months here and there in his career.
It's his defense that keeps him around.
And his defense has been great. Don't get me wrong.
I personally think he should have been a gold glove last year.
Right. Right. I mean, but
that was last year.
Right. I think you got to figure that out.
He was never this bad offensively.
You know, it's ugly. It's really ugly. And so, you know, it's just, it's a mess. And so to me, JBJ, at some point, you have to just say, all right, like, you don't necessarily even have to cut him loose or DFA him or whatever. You don't have to do that. I'm not saying
you have to do something.
But you got to do something. You got to change something up, sit him down for a week or so, like something.
Smack him in the head with a frying pan. I don't know what
I mean. Yeah, well, I mean, that might work. But I mean, you know, whatever. That's JBJ and David Price. I honestly feel like the downfall of the Red Sox, where the Red Sox have gone, started when they got rid of John Lester, and you know, it's kind of, to me at least, because you get rid of Lester, you have to sign Price, and Price is the worst of the worst. He's the worst. He's just, you can't root for the guy. He's on the Red Sox. I should want to like him, and I can't like him. I just can't. He's so unlikable, and like, he can't pitch for whatever reason, Fortnite, or he's got allergies or something.
Carpal tunnel. Dude,
like, what are you doing? Like, are you kidding me? You can't. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. And then he comes out and has a complete game, which, great, good for him. But it's kind of like, wait a second, couldn't he just not pitch like 5 days ago?
And I'm like, yeah, like, where it's not even couldn't you pitch. It's like I was on the brink of death. Okay, take a Claritin.
Right. And the big thing to me is I look at that and say, well, is he just scared then? He just doesn't want to pitch. He just doesn't want to pitch in Yankee Stadium. And so, you know, that's really the question you have to ask is like, is it mental for him more than anything else? And I think when you look at it, I don't think there's a question. You can look at it and say, it's gotta be in his head. And it's the same reason he sucks in the playoffs every year. And you get the Price defenders who come out and say, oh, he's great and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. But like, until he can prove he can do it in the playoffs, I have zero faith in him. Zero. I mean, I have no faith in him. And I don't know how anybody could.
I mean, here's the thing. I had like someone viciously attack me on Twitter like 2 weeks ago. Being like, you know, David Price is actually underpaid. And like, as you know, as a woman trying to, you know, in sports, like I get a lot of stupid tweets at me. But that really took the cake because I was like, you know what, David Price, you know, from the beginning, like, yes, he's had injuries, and I'm not talking about the, you know, we can get into the Yankee thing in a second, but like, he has had injuries. But at the same time, you know, it's also his attitude. The guy doesn't seem like, first he didn't seem like he wanted to be there. Then every spring training, he's like, I'm turning over a new leaf. I don't want to be negative, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, all right, cool. Like I said at the beginning of the season, I was like, I want to like David Price. I want to root for him. I want him to do well here because we're paying him $32 million a year. I want to not hate his guts, you know?
But you do.
But so I does do everybody else. Because he doesn't, you know, and yes, I think that this whole Yankee thing aside, I think that he's had a better attitude this season until the Yankee thing. I think that he'd had a better attitude this season. Like, even when he wasn't doing well, he wasn't being like a little bitch about it the way that he has in years past. And that made me happier because I was like, at the very least, you know, he's a team player and everyone has a rough, you know, he went his first two starts of the season, 7 scoreless innings each, you know, he was showing improvement. And then with the Yankees, my thing is like, you know what? This isn't preschool. You don't get to say like, oh, I'm scared of the big bad Bronx players. Like, I don't want to do it. And then make up 17 excuses.
Right. Figure it out.
Like, you know, in 2004, Pedro said, you know, I can't find a way to beat them. I just have to tip the hat, call the Yankees my daddy. He owned up to the fact that he couldn't pitch against the Yankees. And everyone was like frustrated that he couldn't pitch against them. But it made it that much better when he did. And people respected him for just owning his stuff.
Right.
And David Price, it's like first it's that his hand is numb. Then it's carpal tunnel because of Fortnite. Then it's allergies. It's like, first of all, get your story straight. Right. Pick one and stick to it. But also, you know, you're getting paid $32 million a year to do something that most people dream about. And you're giving basic excuses for like maladies that humans live with every day, like allergies and carpal tunnel. Everyone I know probably has one of those two things. And all that money that you make, you could buy a hell of a lot of Advil and Claritin, suck it up, and do your job.
Right. You know? I mean, that's the thing. That's the biggest thing, I think, for us when we're looking at it, is just to kind of say, like, come on. Like, really? That's the excuse you're going to give? And it seems...
Excuses, plural.
And it just seems... Like, he doesn't even care about giving a legit excuse. It's not even...
Did Haley just hit a home run?
No, he did not. It doesn't seem... It's, you know, those things to me are frustrating because it's like, come on. You know, like...
It's not even like you want to play.
Don't feed me some line. Yeah. Like, it's just... You're just trying to avoid the Yankees. And that's embarrassing. Like, it is. It's embarrassing. And, you know, like you said, Pedro owned up to it, but... He was a man about it. He still pitched against the Yankees. He still did the best he could.
He took his L's, yeah.
And he also pitched well against them in a few games as well. So it's like, you know, you have to kind of look at those things and say, you know, that's the way it goes. And he was obviously a big part of the comeback in 2004. So I think, you know, to compare those two situations, I think is a good look at it because Pedro had his struggles and he owned up to it and eventually kind of got over it.
But, the difference, you know, of course, being that Pedro was also a dominant pitcher.
Right. Well,
most
not only
of
that.
Most of the rest of the time, David Price doesn't even have the stats and the games to back up having this struggle. Like, it's not like, you know, the Yankees are his kryptonite, but everyone else, he kicks ass. It's like you don't get to be a little bitch about the Yankees when you're not even doing your job, you know, 70% of the rest of the time. He only pitched something like 70 innings total last year, and a bunch of them were as a reliever. And people seem to – and, you know, Bostonians' memories are so short in terms of, like, you know, talking about, oh, well, he was so great in the postseason. I'm like, oh, you mean when he was a relief pitcher after doing nothing to help the team as a regular pitcher for the entire regular season?
Right.
Congratulations. Like, what do you want? You want a gold medal for doing part of your job for a week?
Right. And that's really the biggest issue that I have with it is that when you stop and look at it and you just say, you know, what has he really done for this team? And there were people in the offseason talking about him coming out of the bullpen. And it's like he was dominant out of the bullpen. That's true. But the guy's getting paid $30 million a year. You can't put him in the bullpen. That's insane.
32.
And I don't care. I mean, I don't care what he's getting paid or how good he is in the bullpen. Like, I don't care how dominant he is in the bullpen. It doesn't matter. You can't put a guy making that kind of money in the bullpen. It's ridiculous. And so.
And pitching two innings every two games, too.
It's right.
Like, okay.
Right.
But then.
And it goes towards his psyche is really what it does because, you know, the guy can't start a game, but he can come in the fourth inning and pitch really well. And it's like, well, how come he can't come in the first inning and pitch really well? So it's just it's just one of those things that, you know, that gets on everyone's nerves. And
not only that, then you just have to factor in that, like, you know, right now he's not being a tool about in terms of attitude and media and all of this stuff. But you have to factor in the fact that, you know, last year in the midst of all this, he's starting fights with Dennis Eckersley.
Right. Right.
About comments that Eck made about a fellow pitcher. And it's like, wait, I'm sorry. So you're so sensitive that Eck saying that Eduardo Rodriguez isn't having a good game sets you off. Meanwhile, at least Eduardo Rodriguez is pitching as a starter.
Right. Well,
really?
The scary thing is that the players were behind Price for that. And that was kind of how the locker room was going. And that's the scary part of it for me, is that he's kind of infecting the locker room. And I'll tell you what, and I said it before, like, he is one of the most unlikable players I think that's ever played in Boston. I mean, AJ Pierzynski might be a little bit more unlikable than he was, but, like, there's not many guys that have played in Boston that are more unlikable than David Price. And whether he's pitching well or not, it's just so hard to root for him. And I know you, like, I understand you want him to do well because he plays for the Red Sox. And when he does well, the Red Sox do. I get that. But it's like, even still, it's like, I still don't want to root for him.
Well, it's like at what cost, you know?
Right.
Because
right.
Bostonians also want to be able to, like, we take our sports seriously on, like, a human level too. So we want to be able to love our team, you know?
Right.
And, like, you take a team like the 2012 team, Chicken and Beer Guys, and it's like, not only were they losing all the time, but they were assholes. And you don't want to root for a team full of assholes. Like, even if, you know, David Price was pitching, you know, 7 scoreless innings every single time, he seems like he doesn't seem like a good guy. And so you're like, but, and then you've got guys, you know, who, oh, great, we lost. That's great. Super.
That's what it goes.
And Buck Showalter still isn't smiling because his team is still garbage.
30-15. We'll be all right. But no, I mean, I see your point, and I think that that's one of the things about Boston that's unique, is that, you know, we like our guys no matter what. I mean, our teams can be terrible, but we root for, you know, guys, and we honestly, I mean, I think a lot of times we root for the underdog guys. I think that's one of the reasons that everyone loved Pedroia so much, and why, you know, people loved Isaiah Thomas so much, and guys like that, where they're, you know, they're the underdog guys, the guys that no one expects to do well. Whereas Price is almost the opposite, where it's like Price is this amazing guy, and you look at him and you're like, okay, he should be dominant. And as he came in day one and was like, no, I'm just one of the guys. Just here is one of the guys. And it's like, no, you're not one of the guys. You're the ace. Like, you're getting paid like the ace. You're going to come in and give some stability to the team as the ace. And he never did that. And so, you know, what a failure that has been. And meanwhile,
he has the balls, like the temerity, to try and be a team leader when he's being such a bad teammate, you know?
And that's frustrating, you know.
It's like you're infecting the clubhouse while
doing such a
bad job.
Yeah, it's true. So, I mean, I could talk about David Price literally all day and just complain about that guy, because I honestly think that's, as long as Price is on the team, they're never going to win a World Series. That's my opinion of it. Now, I don't know. I just feel like as long as he's on the team, they're never going to win a World Series.
I mean, I said last year, you know, he can't pitch against us in the postseason, and he can't pitch for us either.
Right.
Because he's been with us 2 postseasons now, and he was bad in 2016, and then he was a reliever on a losing team in 2017. And, like, part of that is, like, okay, so he was, like, the only contributor to the good aspect of, like, those 4 games in the ALDS. Right. Fine. But he did nothing to help boost the team the entire season. And in 2013, he gave up 2 home runs to Poppy in 1 game. He couldn't, like, you know, so, and it always kills me that teams, you know, that the Red Sox will pay all of this money for players who aren't good in the postseason. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I am one of those people I'm like, you know, the regular season matters so much, because if you don't have a good team during the regular season, you're 9 times out of 10 not going to have a good team in the postseason. So, like, well, you know, fine. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't – sorry, I'm just, like, trying to turn off the fan. David Price had never proven himself in the postseason and we're giving him the most lucrative contract in pitching history. And then we do the same thing for Chris Sale, who'd never even been in a postseason.
Right. Well, and look, I mean, I think there's a difference there. I mean, there's a happy medium.
Obviously, Chris Sale can throw a ball.
Right. Well, and there's a happy medium somewhere. I mean, I think for me personally, when I look at it and I say, okay, I think Chris Sale, it makes sense because you see what Chris Sale can do and you see the type of player he is. And he's never been to the playoffs because his teams that he played on always sucked, even though he was really good. And right. So I don't know if you can necessarily blame him for that, you know, but at a certain point you start to look at it and say, okay, well, you know, let's give him a big contract. That's fine. But Price has been to the playoffs and outside of his rookie year, when he came out of the bullpen, has never really produced in the playoffs ever. And so, you know, he doesn't have a win in the playoffs
and
when
the
he's
Sox
not
office,
a reliever.
And the Sox office saw that literally firsthand because we demolished him in 2013.
Right. Right. And so to go from the opposite extreme, it's almost like they went from one extreme with Sandoval, where he was only good in the regulars, only good in the playoffs, to the other extreme with, you know, with Price, where he was only good in the regular season. And it's just like, it was like, well, what do you want? Do you want a team that's good in the regular season? Or do you want a team that's good in the playoffs? Because you're doing everything the wrong way. I think they didn't have a plan for a while. I think Dombrowski, honestly, for a while, was just kind of throwing stuff against the wall.
Yeah, well, he's like loading up on pitchers without kind of reckless abandon.
Well, I think, too, Sherrington really caught the short end of the stick. Yeah. I think Sherrington is better than he's given credit for. I don't think he wanted Sandoval or Hanley, to be honest with you.
No.
I mean, you find two guys that play the same position that do exactly the same thing. It's like, what are you doing? It didn't make any sense. It never made any sense. And so, you know, that one was tough for me to take, where it's like, what are you doing? Like, that was stupid. And again, I don't know if that's Sherrington or if that's Lucchino and, you know, the other guys feeding the monster. And eventually, I think you get the answer to that when Lucchino is now out of the decision making. So it's like, well, the reason why Lucchino is out of the decision making is because what happened that offseason. And what happened that offseason is they signed, you know, Hanley and Sandoval. And so clearly that's a decision coming from that side of it and not coming from the GM side of it, in my opinion, at least. Now, I don't know that for sure, but that's where I'm coming from, at least. But who knows? So anyways, we've been talking for a while. I really appreciate having you on. It's been a lot of fun. We'll have to see where it goes. I mean, 45 games in, I think I'm still reasonably happy with where they are. I mean, they're 13-13 now in the last 26, ever since starting 17-2. But again, if they can figure it out, core, you know, first year manager kind of has to get them through these lulls. And so we'll see, you know, we'll see if they can kind of turn the next 25 games into, you know, maybe 15-10. And now all of a sudden you're doing well again. So who knows? We'll see what happens, but, you know, it should be fun. So before we let you go, let's just talk quickly about this whole Yankees thing that happened last week. You wrote an article about it that had a ridiculous amount of views, and just kind of explain the situation to us, because it's just stupid.
So, I mean, to preface this, I'll just say, you know, this is like in an age where MLB is trying so hard to make sure that people still actually care about baseball. So the fact that this story even happened is hilarious. And by hilarious, I mean, I literally never thought I would feel bad for a Yankees fan. But then again, I also never thought I'd see David Price pitch a complete game again. So it's been a weird week. It's been a weird week. There's a guy who goes to Yankee games, and I guess he always wears these bright neon outfits with like messages on them for the Yankees. And in the last game of the Sox Yankee series last week, the one where they had like an hour long rain delay, you know, most of the ballpark emptied because obviously Yankee fans are weaker than Red Sox fans and they don't, you know, they melt in the rain. So you could see from the TV, Yankee Stadium was pretty empty, long rain delay. This guy moves down to the Legends section, which I guess are like the Yankees fancy seats. I don't know because I will never set foot in Yankee Stadium.
I've been there. It's pretty nice. Not gonna lie,
I'm surprised that your face didn't melt off.
Roll call. I'll tell you, roll call is cheesy and tacky. It's pretty cool though. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's a pretty cool thing. I sat in the bleachers one game, Yankees Orioles, of course, wearing my Dustin Pedroia jersey with the Patriots hat.
Of course you did.
No, but and no one said a word to me. because actually everyone said, the only thing anyone ever said to me was like, you got some balls wearing that shirt here. And I'm like, yep, I do. Like,
I used to wear.
Like, there was no one said a word outside of that. But I mean, you know, I do. I mean, it is a nice stadium. I will say that it's a very nice stadium. So
I mean, I used to wear a 2004 ALCS championship sweatshirt on campus at Columbia University in Harlem. So, yeah. You know, I've got some balls, but I don't feel the need to go to that hellhole. So anyway,
right. Anyways,
this guy, he goes down to the legend section and he's wearing his shirts. And I guess he's been caught on camera before, like, I guess because he stands out from the crowd in his neon thing. But this time, he very clearly is not supposed to be in that section, doesn't have the tickets for the section. And the section looked pretty empty to me. And he gets escorted out of the section and banned from Yankee Stadium for life. But not only is he banned for life, it's the COO of the Yankees, Lon Trost, who personally bans him. And, like, I don't know how the Yankees work. Maybe, like, Lon Trost has nothing better to do with his time that he's takes pleasure in banning people for life. But that doesn't seem like a run-of-the-mill banning to me. And then, on top of it, he has the guy arrested, and the guy's thrown in a holding cell in the Bronx for 24 hours. You just have to wonder, you know, first of all, like, what could this guy have possibly done to merit such a drastic overreaction? But also, you know, Yankee Stadium is one of the newest and most expensive ballparks in America. You know, not every ballpark is sold out all the time like Fenway. You know, like when I went to the Angels series, we paid $8 for our tickets, and then we didn't even sit in our seats. We only bought them so we could get into the ballpark. We sat, you know, 10 rows behind home plate because the Red Sox were kicking the Angels' butts so much that the stadium was empty by like the third inning. No one was there. Right. And my feeling is, if you're not actively taking someone's seats, why does it matter? Shouldn't the park want fans to enjoy the game? And definitely not banning the guy for life and having him thrown in a holding cell for 24 hours. Like, that just seems like so extreme.
Yeah. I mean, one thing to me, I mean, look, you know, I think you should kind of let people go wherever they want. I will say, being a Patriots season ticket holder, the guys stand at the top of the section. You cannot get down the section unless you have a ticket that says you belong in that section.
Right.
And that's fine. Like, whatever. You want to do that at every section, that's totally fine. And then it's on them. Like, then it's on them to make sure you don't go down there. But, like, if everyone's gone and you're somewhere – now, maybe this guy is in the legend section and he's not supposed to be there. Okay, fine. Like, he's not supposed to be there. So get him out of there. You want to even kick him out of the game? Fine, kick him out of – but a lifetime ban?
And getting arrested. And then arresting
the guy is like, come on. Like, now you just – you know, and I don't know. Maybe he was belligerent. Maybe he was – punching people. I don't know. Like, I don't, maybe there's more to the story than that, but it didn't seem like there was, you know what I mean? So it's like
everything I read, cause I said the same thing. I was like, there's gotta be a reason that this happened the way that it happened. But everything that I've read, it just seems like the guy was in the legend section. And even if he'd like done it once or twice before, you know, I don't see how anything he could have possibly done would have been drastic enough to merit the response by the Yankees. And to me, it's just like, you know, fine, I don't care. Yankees fans, you know, whatever.
Right.
But in all my years of going to Fenway Park, and my seats that I usually sit in are ticketed seats, you know, they're close to the Sox dugout, so they're ticketed seats. But, you know, that 19-inning game against Toronto last year, I was at that game, and it's, you know, the game went till 1:30 in the morning. The ballpark was empty by, like, the 12th inning. There were probably, by the 19th inning, there were probably 500 of us in the ballpark at most. We were all sitting together on the first baseline, and we're all hanging out, complaining, talking, joking, like, whatever. Right. And then when that game was over, we all kind of felt like we were friends. You know, and it's like, that's what baseball should be. And this guy had like maybe the worst experience I've ever heard of at a ballpark.
Yeah.
For what seems like no reason.
Right. And again, like, you know, even if you have a policy that says you can't move seats or you can't do this, Like, it's like, okay, fine, he did it, but no one's there. If everyone clears out and you stay, well, your, you know, your compensation for you staying, your reward for you staying is you get to move down and sit somewhere else because you get to pick wherever you want to sit because everyone's gone. You know, like, that's just the way it goes. And so, like, to punish someone that severely for doing something like that is so ridiculous and makes so much sense, since, of course, it's the Yankees, that they would do something that incredibly stupid and just totally stuck up. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's like, you can't have a beard and you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't move your seat or otherwise we're going to ban you permanently from the stadium. And it's like, dude, get off your flipping high horse
and accept that you are just like everybody else and the rules apply to you too. Anyways, Gabrielle, thanks for coming on. Before you go, where can people find and interact with you?
On Twitter, it's GFSTARR1, GFSTAR1, or Girl at the Game. And I live tweet almost every single Red Sox game. WTPSports.com, GirlAtTheGame.com, baseball coverage all the time.
Okay, big thanks to Gabrielle for coming on. It was a lot of fun talking Red Sox. Obviously, I don't talk Red Sox much on this show, but it's good to have her on, talk a little Red Sox as we're kind of getting through the season. So I did tell you we have a three-minute drill, and the three-minute drill is going to be on the Celtics. And so let's get right into it because what the hell? All right, here we go. So here's the deal. They're playing unbelievable. They're up 2-0 on LeBron and the Cavs. And I say LeBron pause and the Cavs for good reason because the Cavs are not very good. LeBron is also obviously great, but the Cavs are not very good. Celtics have been doing a great job. I mean, it's not just on the Cavs. But this supporting cast is not very good. But he also has Kevin Love, who's been pretty darn good in the series. You know, I know the rest of his team really hasn't been good. I mean, game two, everyone not named LeBron James or Kevin Love scored 29 points. So you're talking about take two guys out and they scored 29 total points outside of those two guys. So clearly, they're not great offensively, obviously. And they're not very good defensively either. And so, but the Celtics have really done a good job attacking them on both the offensive and defensive end to kind of exploit those weaknesses. Stevens does it better than anybody else. And that's why it's so, you know, it's such a coaching mismatch that this is where coaching really matters. When you have holes in your squad, you need a coach that can attack those holes and really kind of bring those things out. And look, here's a simple fact of it, right? LeBron is fantastic, obviously, and he can come down every play and just run a pick and roll, and, you know, they set a high screen, and now all of a sudden he's got a guy on him that, you know, can't cover him. Well, with the Celtics, all five guys on the court can do a decent job covering LeBron. I mean, none of them are stopping LeBron. You're not stopping LeBron if he really wants to go to the rim or if he really wants to score. You're not doing it. But at least you can hold your own, right? They're not all Marcus Morris. They're not even all Marcus Smart. But, you know, they can at least do some form or measure of stopping him. Whereas on the other end of the floor, these guys can't cover the Celtics, and it's really showing. It's really surprising to me, to be honest with you. I didn't think they'd be up 2-0. I thought they had a chance to win the series, but I thought it would be a heck of a lot closer than it has been. But it's been fantastic. I mean, you see what's going on. But don't sleep on the Cavs. I'm telling you, if they win games 3 and 4 at home, now you have to win game 5. And if you don't, now you got to win 2 in a row, and you got to win one in Cleveland. So the Celtics really need to steal one of these two in Cleveland, I think, because that's really going to be the telling of the game. And I really think game 3 is the big one to me because the Cavs are down, and you know LeBron's going to have a great game. And LeBron had a great game too, don't get me wrong. But you know LeBron's going to have a great game. And so it's really about the rest of the lineup. What can the rest of the lineup do? If the Celtics can weather that storm and try to play good defense against the rest of the guys and try to still continue to be good on the offensive end, they could be able to pull off game 3. And if you pull off game 3, then obviously at that point the series is pretty much over. You're up 3-0, and that's pretty much the end of that. So we'll see what happens. Game 3, I'm recording Friday night, but obviously this is coming out on Saturday. So game 3 is tonight. We'll see what happens. You know, if they win game 3, then obviously the series is over. They lose game 3, game 4 becomes pretty much a must-win for the Celtics. And if they lose that one, now they have to win game 5
or they're screwed. And so I think for the Celtics, I wouldn't be sleeping on the Cavs just yet. And I know the good news is about Brad Stevens is that he's not sleeping on the Cavs, right? After game one, they blew him out by 25 points. And his response was, we need to play better if we want to win this series. It's just like, that's who he is. So you know they're going to bring it. You know that the coach is going to bring it, that he's got them. He's in their head saying, hey, look, don't, it doesn't matter. We're up 2-0. It doesn't make a difference. So I think that's it. That's an important thing to do. But as sports, as us, as the Celtics fans, we need to do that as well. So anyways, let's get into this week in sports history. This week in sports history, there's some interesting ones, okay? So the first one is May 18th, 1912. The Tigers lose to the defending champs, Philadelphia Athletics, 24-2. But what's interesting about this is that it was the Tigers, but it wasn't really the Tigers. Ty Cobb had been suspended indefinitely by the president of the American League. And I believe the guy's name actually was Ban Johnson, which is kind of funny that he had banned Ty Cobb. Anyways, the players decided to strike because he had been suspended. So they didn't have a team. They literally did not have a team. And so you start to look at it like, wow. But Johnson said, hey, listen, you know, he talked to the owner of the Tigers, and he said, for every game you don't play, you're going to get a $5,000 fine. Okay? For actually every day, I believe, that you don't play, you're going to get a $5,000 fine, which is about $120,000 today, if you want to equate it to money today. It's about $120,000. And so he literally just hired random people, just totally random people that didn't know anything. The pitcher for that game was Alan Travers, okay? He was 20 years old in college, was a future priest. The guy ended up becoming a priest. He pitched all 9 innings and gave up all 24 runs. Only 14 of them were earned, though, because they had 10 unearned runs because the rest of the team was so terrible as well. But, I mean, think about that. I mean, the guy really didn't play any, really never played any baseball, okay? There were 2 future boxers on the team, 5 sandlotters. The guys just, it was absolutely ridiculous, okay? Now, the reason why Cobb was suspended is because Ty Cobb. I mean, this is the definition of Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb had beaten a fan senseless, and it happened to be a disabled fan. Now, it wasn't, when we say disabled, I mean, the guy had lost 8 fingers. So he was disabled, but it wasn't like he was mentally handicapped or he was in a wheelchair or something like that. But even still, he had lost 8 out of 10 fingers. And Cobb said, you know, that it was one of those things where, like, the guy kept heckling him, and Cobb, you know, and apparently it happened over a period of time where the guy continued to heckle him, and Cobb said, you know, cut it out, you know, quit heckling me, and the guy got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and Cobb just eventually literally went in the stands and beat the crap out of the guy, and fans were, like, begging him to stop, and he wouldn't stop, and they had to, like, pull him off, and the guy was covered in blood. It was an absolute mess. But Ty Cobb, as, you know, as people know, you know, if you don't know already, Ty Cobb was an absolute jerk when he was alive, obviously. And, you know, they actually make reference to it in Field of Dreams, if you've watched Field of Dreams. But, you know, terrible person. He, you know, killed somebody in cold blood. You know, and so anyways, it was wild. Okay. The players ended up coming back on the 21st, and I don't think they played another game. So that was the only game they played with the replacement players, but you know, it was kind of ridiculous. Cobb ended up being suspended for 10 games for that incident. But what a story that, you know, he beats up a disabled guy. I mean, only Ty Cobb beats up a disabled guy, and then, you know, a bunch of reject no-name guys who had never really played baseball before played the defending champs, the Philadelphia Athletics, and lose 24-2. And I think the craziest part about this is not the fact that they allowed 24 runs, but they scored 2 runs. These are guys that, like, most of them had never even played baseball before. Or some of them were playing baseball, like, in, like, pickup games in the street. So the fact that they even scored 2 runs is pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie to you. So anyways, that was May 18th, 1912. And also May 18th, 2014, Adam Scott passes Tiger Woods for number 1 in the world after Tiger was there for 60 That's right, 60 weeks. Tiger has never reached number one since the last time he was at number one. But he has been number one for a record 683 weeks overall. So, you know, you talk about, you know, how long someone was in first place. That is the record, 683 weeks, which is just ridiculous. And honestly, if we're being honest, golf is more fun with Tiger Woods. It's more fun with Tiger there. And you feel like when Sunday comes around, if he's in the hunt, if he's in the top 20, let's say, you feel like he can make some movement. And he did some really cool things in the past month or so. But it just doesn't feel like he's that same type of guy that can come through and do what you need him to do. Whether he can or not, I don't know. I mean, he was one of the best closers in the history of golf as far as coming down the stretch and really closing tournaments out. And he just doesn't seem to have that, you know, Sunday magic anymore. But you never know. You never know. And like I said, golf is just so much more fun with Tiger in it. So it would be pretty cool if he could bounce back. So anyways, that's all I got for the show. Like I said, I mean, you know, I don't want to say I'm a hero, but a pretty heroic performance by me tonight, if I do say so myself. You're welcome. I do it for you guys. Love you guys. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. You know, you guys are the reason that I'm here. You guys are the reason I'm still going. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys. And, you know, you can check out my writing, too, on WTPsports.com. I do write a decent amount of articles. I actually wrote an article this week about the three-minute drill, talking about how the Celtics, you know, Celtics fans shouldn't get complacent just being up 2-0 and, you know, anything can happen, especially with LeBron on the Cavs. I do want to give a few quick shout-outs before I let you guys go. I want to shout out Marcus from the Boxes Podcast. Thank you for the intro song. Make sure you check them out on Mondays and Honor the Triforce as well. Mac and Goo on Tuesday and Thursday and Friday, and the Dork Podcast on Wednesdays, and they've released another one on Friday too, I think, this week. So, but you know, definitely check Marcus out. Him and Wesley do a great job on the Boxers, and that's a lot of fun usually. So, and they talk about a movie, and even if you don't like the movie, they're just so much fun to listen to that you end up enjoying the episode, even if you have no desire to see the movie anyway. So, anyways, definitely worth checking out. Also want to give a shout out to M. and Core for the outro song. M. is on Instagram and Twitter at MDOT Boston, and Core is at Core of EMS, K-O-R-E of EMS. Want to thank him for that. And again, you know, M. actually was played on Touch and Rich after the break this morning, as a matter of fact. He's getting big, man. He's blowing up, and we appreciate him. We love him around here, and he's my cousin. And I don't know if you guys know that, but he's my cousin, and you know, super proud of what he's done and the music that he makes, and done some songs with Method Man, and was on the Blacklist on NBC. And so, if you enjoy listening to hip hop music, definitely check out M. And like I said, his newest album is on iTunes, so you can download it right on iTunes and listen to it. He's on Spotify, so you can just look up M. on Spotify, and he comes right up. So definitely check him out. As for me, you can find me at Weekend War Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And again, it's very simple. It's Weekend War Pod with no E's. So WKNDWARPOD. So check me out there. You can also find me at WTP Lane. And, you know, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Really helps us out. We appreciate that. So that's all we got for this week. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you next week.
Mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up. song. We're gonna listen and rock to what it